consequential enough wake. But a technological breakthrough can be disruptive too. It is not impossible, by definition, for us to discover radically new sources of energy, or maybe it wouldn't even be energy, but just it isn't impossible that we might make fundamental discoveries in physics that would make fossil fuels unnecessary, non-competitive, that would transform that. It's not absolutely impossible that we might even discover a way to capture and sequester carbon. But our ecological predicament isn't narrowly just this climate, global warming thing. The destruction of habitats, the extinction of species, but also very technical things having to do with acidification of oceans and potential anoxic events and runaway methane release, a variety of sort of technical things, phosphorus, nitrogen flows, quite technical. I don't understand it in depth, but I do try to at least basically grasp the implications of these things. We hear these things and they're so abstract. We are living our lives in this beautiful part of the world where, I mean, what a beautiful morning. And would we add a thing to it by letting the weight of the world on our shoulders prevent us from being able to take joy in encountering a friend and gathering together in worship and seeing the beautiful blue of the sky, even on a hazy day? I'm sorry, it's here to be celebrated. And not only that, but look back on the whole history of evolution. The history of evolution is a history, many of you know this technical term in evolutionary theory, emergence. Emergence essentially is a nice scientific word for miracle. It's when something unpredictable takes place that takes things, you know, life out of dead matter. I'm sorry, that's amazing. You know, I love the way I like to summarize the story of evolution. If you leave hydrogen and helium alone long enough, eventually they'll write symphonies and build cathedrals and put telescopes into orbit and wonder about the meaning of it all. So a sense of awe, a positive expectancy, not a depressed quality, is appropriate if we really take on board the miraculous dynamism of evolution itself. Why should there be no more miracles now? The future will have, necessarily will have, miracles. But, you know, the future of the evolution of every single creature on this planet, even plant life, is going to be largely, very, very significantly shaped by the behaviors and choices of human beings. You know, when we look back, some of you perhaps have encountered this new field called big history, where you put together everything we know in a single story, where you begin with the Big Bang and you look at what happened with cosmic evolution, and then you notice how that began to express itself in biological evolution much faster, and then cultural evolution much, much faster. And then cultural evolution in our own day, faster, 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 faster. And there are people here of all ages, but many of us are a little older. And in my lifetime, I remember going to my science class in elementary school and being told, the universe is way bigger than we even imagined. We've discovered that there are two other galaxies. beside our own. And now we're told there are billions of galaxies. So I've watched cultural evolution take place in my own lifetime. You know, the changes in cosmic evolution and biological evolution, and even most of the years of cultural evolution, took place so slowly that in the span of a single human lifetime, you couldn't see anything happening. It was as if we were always, from a human scale, from the perceptual, you know, aperture we can peer out from, nothing was changing, man. It was a stable scene. We're among the first generations for whom that ain't how it is. We're here in this time. So how do we be with this? Well, one of the things that I think is really valuable is for us to bear in mind a soul perspective. I'm grounded mostly in what I call a non-dual or transcendental spiritual orientation, which has to do with waking up from false identities as the conscious beingness that is being all things. But there's another angle on understanding spirituality that has to do with it being the journey of a soul through a lifetime. And the journey of a soul is always a journey of education, a journey where there are tests, lessons. And because I hope some of you will become interested enough in how I think to maybe want to get a copy of my book, and if you read it, you'll hear how I integrate this transcendental and soul orientations to spirit. But enough for this morning to say that both, I think, are true. There is a way that however much I may understand that if E equals MC squared, then all of this is an incredible quantity of petrified light. And if time and space are one thing, trying to make sense of that and put that inside my way of seeing the world is like, that's stronger than the strongest acid you could ever drop. You know, that's a non-dual view, yeah. But on another level, I'm me, and I'm going through this life, and I'm learning lessons, and it's my experience of how things are going, right? That's the soul-based orientation. And as souls, if we really take that seriously, something in our being said yes, consented to being here now. We are, many of us elders, in a world at the tipping point, at the time when transformations on an evolutionary scale are taking place. What happens in the next years, in our lifetimes, matters beyond belief. And any kind of moral relationship with that has to take that to heart in some way. That maybe you've heard that punch in the gut poem, the lines from Drew Dellinger's Hieroglyphic Stairway. It's 3:23 in the morning and I can't sleep. I keep hearing the voices of my great-great-grandchildren calling, asking me, what were you doing when the planet was unraveling? What were you doing when the oceans were dying? What were you doing once you knew? What did you do? Well, that's pretty intense. Things are far too serious for us to lose our sense of humor. We have to somehow be with that at the same time that we are with the heaviness. And I think that our souls were willing to be here at a time in which the pressures are becoming titanic. The kinds of pressures that turn coal into diamonds on the physical level have an analog in the cultural and psychological and spiritual space. And You know that bumper sticker, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention? Well, outrage isn't enough. You know, you've got to be transfigured by this. You've got to become a different kind of presence. You've got to become capable of a kind of love that is more authoritative than this stupid, fear-stimulating anger stuff we're getting. And none of us are that authoritative. I'm not. You're not. We're all in a pressure that's asking us to become a different kind of human being. Now, in adult development and cultural evolutionary circles, that's called a stage transition to a new structure. You know, there are broad agreements of worldview. We roughly sometimes call them traditional, modern, postmodern. Time for a new one. Time for human beings. We think of our species, Homo sapiens sapiens of all ages, as a species that itself goes through a process of maturation over millennia. Maybe we're in the adolescence of the species now. But it seems to me we're getting a rite of passage. You know, in Africa, those rites of passage always scare the pants off those 13, 12, 11-year-old boys. They actually do risk their lives. They go to a place where they think they may not come back. And that's what it takes to become a warrior, a man, in that configuration. Well, lucky us, we're getting that too. Our maturity is being forged by something. It's very, very hard to be present to all of this in a disposition that is actually fully available to learn the lessons it's trying to teach us. Because it's so scary. It's so heartbreaking. These are not just our grandkids, great-grandkids, or if we don't have kids of our own, the generations of, you know, to which we give our legacy. These are the, if we wrote a book, they're the world into which the message of that book would ripple. If we make music, you know, whatever our expression is that has given our life meaning, you imagine complete unraveling of human civilization in some ugly Mad Max dystopian future or none of, you know, human extinction. It's very easy to get so disoriented and depressed that we feel we would collapse. You know, you can't go on. It's horrible beyond horror. And we don't know that that won't happen. The trends point there. The trends actually point there. How horrific. And yet we're involved in a miraculous process, and we ourselves are a vehicle through which miracles can happen. We can participate in this ongoing affair of learning and living, of learning every day of our lives, however long we may live, and becoming better, fuller, more conscious, more loving, more vulnerably awake and dynamic souls. It's a little like a Zen koan, isn't it? We're all posed this ridiculously impossible question. You know, what is the sound of one hand clapping? That's a koan. Or show me your original face, the one you had before your parents were born. Those are impossible questions, and the monk has got to find an answer to them. But how does he do that? How does she do that? The mind is stopped, the heart is stopped, the being breaks open, and a new possibility, a new consciousness maybe can come through. Well, we have all been given the same impossible questions at this moment. I think that can bring us together in a different way. we can't answer. I need to answer that question, and my answer to that question as a solo individual ain't going to cut it. That question needs an answer that comes from a human collective. So I need you. I need others. I need to find my way into communities of practice where we can take these intense questions to heart with a sense of joy and possibility and humor, with the spunk and sass and sexy aliveness that are us at our best, and become friends at a whole new level, and let our friendships lead our graduation into a new human adulthood. That would be how I would like to live this time. And if the worst case is inevitable, if we imagine that it's too late and it's all going to hell in a handbasket, James Hillman wrote another book late in his career called The Force of Character. He was, I think, in his mid-80s, and I think he already had the cancer that ended his life. And, you know, his whole work had been about the soul and the crafting of depth. And he said, you know, here at the end of my life, what is it that my soul is wanting to do? I've kind of already done my life's work. What is it that's up for me now here in these? But he said, you know, my real life work weren't my, whatever it was, 30 books or something. The real life work was my character. And, you know, here at the end, I'm putting a finish on it. It's like I'm getting out the sun. I already made the piece of fine woodworking that is my character, but now I'm getting out the fine grit sandpaper. I'm rubbing in the oil. I'm buffing it to a sheen. I'm putting a finish on it. I'm meeting the insults of injury, loss of function, sickness, loss of friends, loss of indignities and insults that are part of approaching the end of life. I'm meeting that with all of the capacity I cultivated. And I'm actually even blossoming more. Well, you know, if the whole human species were coming to an end, it would be putting a finish on its character too, wouldn't it? So, even in that worst case scenario, what would I want to be doing? I would want to be the beginnings of that authoritative love that roars. I would want to be the beginnings of a kind of human friendship that actually knits us together with a kind of altruism that makes us able to outcompete that kind of brutish selfishness. I would want to be the beginnings of the thing that would have turned it around if it could have been turned around. Same either way. So for me, this world crisis is like a Shaktipat. That's in the Siddha yoga or Kundalini yoga traditions. It's where the teacher shoots this energy and awakens something yogically in the student. I think we're all being shot with a new energy. And let it awaken us. Let us hear the alarm bell, all hands on deck. Oh, okay. All of what I've done in my life is preparation for a moment now where I can take things so seriously, I find a new level of sense of humor, a new capacity to befriend others, a willingness to show up for a moment when everything matters. And let that be inspiring. The German word for contemporary is Zeitgenossen. Time comrade. We're time comrades. Our souls said yes to being here now. This is our time. It's not like, oh no, I'm here when something bad is happening. I wish I were, you know, born 50 years before so I didn't have to see this ugly thing. No, we came for this. This is our time. This is what we were born for. Let's discover each other in the aliveness.